This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, as ceremonies remembered and paid tribute to victims of the 9/11 attacks that took place 16 years ago, some question whether America is safer today. We'll talk about that with retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin a little bit later here on Washington Watch. And one area where conservatives are giving the Trump administration high marks is in their judicial nominees. But they're being blocked and their reputations savaged by Senate liberals. What can Americans do to help President Trump take back the courts? We'll ask Florida Congressman Ron DeSantis, and we'll also get an update on the effects of hurricane, now tropical storm, Irma. Also coming up, how are Christians to live in a world that is increasingly turning its back on truth? Alex McFarland, director of the Center for Christian Worldview and Apologetics at North Greenville University, joins us for that conversation. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you are on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. Let me encourage you to check out the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything on your way home this Monday afternoon, you can find it archived there at TonyPerkins.com. By the way, information up there on the website. If you'd like to take a trip with us to Israel, FRC is taking its second trip to Israel. It's unlike any other, as we not only see the historical, the from a biblical perspective, the historical sites, we also delve into the geopolitical realities of today. We'll be talking to political leaders. We'll be talking to those involved in defense and other areas to find out more. Great trip. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, so much going on both in D.C. and across the country and in Florida with hurricane, now tropical storm Irma. We also remember that today is 9/11. 16 years ago, these attacks took place on this country. And we're going to talk more about that. But first, while President Trump's policy agenda has been stalled, he has been wildly successful at nominating young conservatives to the federal bench. And let me tell you, folks, I have looked through the list. I've met with many of them. I've, you know, communicated with the White House about it. And I just have to commend them highly for what they've been doing. He's been so successful, a coalition of progressive organizations are lobbying the Senate Judiciary Committee to slow down the confirmation process of federal judges. And we're now seeing liberal senators really savage the reputations of many of these individuals. And in many cases, it's because of their religious convictions. Joining us now is Congressman Ron DeSantis. He represents the 6th Congressional District of the state of Florida, and he serves on the House Judiciary Committee and chairman of the National Security Subcommittee and a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee. Ron and his family live in Marineland, Florida. Congressman, first, before we start, how are you and your family doing?
Oh, we're doing good. We actually, they evacuated where my neighborhood is a couple days ago. And so, you know, I've kind of been out in the district and other places. And then now last night, you know, we were kind of hunkered down as the storm went through. And, you know, look, it's a big storm that affected a lot of parts of Florida, you know, did damage to a couple Florida Keys, did some damage in Marco Island. But most of kind of the worst case scenario that it would wipe Naples off the map or Tampa, St. Pete, the storm lost some steam and didn't do the cataclysmic damage to those population centers that were feared. But even though it went up the west coast of Florida, you had flooding as far north and east as Jacksonville and then other communities. And so, you know, there's damage, but we'll get through it. And then I think we'll be fine. It's just going to take some time.
I mean, having gone through that in Louisiana last year, the flooding, you know, when it impacts a community, it impacts a family in particular, your family, it obviously strikes very close to home. But as you rightly point out, this storm tracked more to the west than originally predicted. And quite frankly, it could have been a whole lot worse than it turned out to be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I left Washington during the work week because the storm was coming. We thought it was going to be an East Coast storm. So I kind of ran down, made preparations for my family. We're talking to the folks in my districts, make sure they had what they needed. And at that time, you were looking at a, potentially a direct hit on Miami, which is one of the most populous areas in the country. You also had that after it would do that, it would ride up the entire East Coast and really wreak havoc. And it didn't do that. The westward track was ominous, had it really nailed Tampa St. Pete at a Cat 3 or 4, which was very possible. And it didn't do that. So I think what you'll see, there'll be pretty much everywhere you go, I think in the whole state, if you have trees, there's going to be branches down, debris everywhere. There is some flooding in some areas. But by and large, it was not kind of the earth-shattering cataclysmic event that some of the meteorologists were fearing.
Now, one thing that will take some time to recover from, not just the replanting of trees, but Florida Power and Light said affected areas will see a wholesale rebuild of the power grid. They describe it as the longest restoration in U.S. history. So we're looking at a long time before the whole power grid is rebuilt and put back in full swing there.
Well, in certain parts, for sure. I mean, the Florida Keys, they really got hit. Key Largo, Marathon. Key West, incidentally, they thought that was going to be ground zero, that potentially it would be the end of Key West to take a direct hit from a Cat 5. You know, Key West had some damage, but actually it wasn't as bad. So all in the Keys, I think there's going to need to be a lot of infrastructure, and they're warning residents of the Keys that you may not even be able to go back there for a couple weeks. Some of the other areas, I think it just depends on the damage. There's some places where power is starting to get up. Now, my parents live in the St. Pete, Tampa area. They live in Pinellas County. That would have kind of been ground zero had that been a direct shot. But they had, they had debris in the yard, but their power was on today. So I think it'll be uneven in terms of when the power gets back on. But there's no doubt some of those areas, it's going to be a long time. And that's the thing. I mean, not having the power is bad, but when you're not even able to get to your home because people want to go and see what right. damage there was, and they want to start recovering and fixing their property.
Yeah, that is the difficult part of waiting. And then oftentimes if there's been flooding and you can't get back in time to start the restoration process and the cleanup, it can make things worse. But we are grateful it wasn't worse than it was. And I know a lot of folks, including those in Louisiana and Texas who were affected by recent storms, were praying for the people of Florida. So we're grateful that it was not worse than it was. Congressman, let's turn our attention now to an area where I think we're probably in agreement that this administration has done quite well in making selections for the courts. Some stellar candidates put forward with solid constitutional conservative credentials, but there is a united effort to stop them and keep them from being confirmed in the Senate.
No doubt. Well, this is probably the most consequential difference so far with Donald Trump beating Hillary Clinton. Had Hillary Clinton won, Obama had already done the circuit courts of appeals to where there was a majority of left-wing judges. And it depended on the circuit how much of a majority. But very few circuits did conservatives really have a fighting chance. There were a couple. Had Hillary won, all these things would have been filled by liberal judges. She would have filled Scalia's seat with a liberal judge. There'd be five liberal justices on the Supreme Court. So that was kind of the liberal dream. I mean, they would have really, I think, manhandled the Constitution for a generation had she won the election. So instead, we have President Trump, and not only has he prevented Hillary from, or the Democrats from taking further control of the courts, he's put Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. And he's put a farm team of really young, talented conservative jurists on the federal courts of appeals, and he's nominated more of those who haven't been confirmed yet, so that future Republican presidents, I mean, they're going to have, it's going to be an embarrassment of riches for people who could potentially be elevated to the U.S. Supreme Court if you're looking for somebody that has judicial experience. So this is so consequential. And I think the Democrats are treating this like they treated everything else with the election. They don't want to admit that Donald Trump won the election, so they want to figure out any way they can do to stymie him from doing his job about nominating these types of people to the courts. And they're doing it. And you know, I think that I'm glad that some have been confirmed. But to me, this should be kind of first order of business. I mean, I want to see way more confirmed as soon as possible. In a four-year term, he has the chance to really save us from an imperial judiciary. I mean, hopefully he gets two terms. And so the Democrats know that, and I think they're going to do everything they can to drag it out and prevent good people from getting on the bench.
Well, Congressman DeSantis, there's a reason for that. Clearly, is because the left, liberals, progressives, whatever you want to describe them as, have relied upon the courts to implement their agendas. It hasn't been done legislatively. They haven't succeeded in getting it through, even when Barack Obama was president, with the exception of Obamacare. But they've had to use the courts to preserve it. And most every other aspect of their social agenda has been accomplished through the courts.
That's right. I mean, they really view the courts as a super legislature, and things that they know that the voters wouldn't necessarily sign off on. If you can get liberal law professors to start writing this about a certain issue, you get the New York Times to editorialize about it, all of a sudden you've created this elite opinion on the progressive left spectrum in our country. And if you get five justices to agree with it, voila, you've created a whole new constitutional doctrine. And they've really been successful at doing that through the years. But they've had to work at it because you have to at least convince Kennedy, who, you know, is not a consistent conservative, but he does vote with conservatives sometimes. Had they been able to replace Nino Scalia with a liberal justice, they wouldn't have had to do – all they'd have to do is just tee up the issues. And you would have had five liberals voting in lockstep. And so the damage that's been done, I think, would have failed in comparison to the damage that could have been done with a Hillary Clinton presidency and five liberal Supreme Court justices voting in a block.
And, of course, Congressman DeSantis, that's one reason. Anytime someone begins to, you know, have concerns about the Trump administration, they're not moving fast enough, they're not accomplishing this. I mean, just to look at the sharp contrast between the judiciary under what a Hillary Clinton presidency would look like and what Donald Trump is attempting to do with constitutionalists, I mean, there's no question of the contrast. But what do what average Americans, what can they do to help the president advance these nominees, because they're being blocked either by the blue slips, where senators are simply refusing, home state senators refusing to give way, and then you get these line of attacks on people because of their faith. I mean, how are we going to get these through?
Well, I would say contact your U.S. senators, regardless of party. First of all, the blue slip doesn't even make sense with Circuit Court of Appeals judges. You know, there's an old practice with this for the district judges in the various states, but a district judge sits in a particular state. These Court of Appeals judges, they decide cases that affect multiple states. And so one home state senator or two home state senators should not have that.
Whoops. I think we lost him. Unreliable cell lines out there in Florida. Anyway, that was we're going to keep on this issue, and we'll get Congressman DeSantis back another time to finish that conversation. But coming up next, we're going to check in with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and get his thoughts on a couple of things. One, 9/11. 16 years ago, America was attacked. In fact, it was the most significant attack since Pearl Harbor. We look back now. Is America safer today than it was 16 years ago? A lot of changes have been made. But are the dangers still as real, or are they more significant? Don't go away. General Boykin joins us right after these messages.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? Our founding fathers knew that God's transcendent truth must be the foundation for all law. Since the early 20th century, however, truth-based rule of law has changed dramatically in America. The progressive era ushered in big change, shifting our standards to make it appear that truth is ever-evolving. America's founding fathers determined truth from a fixed source, God. but progressives determined that truth originated with man, thereby making it possible to change the truth in order to fit shifting cultural opinions and to undergird the power of those elected in office. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston reveals the importance of truth founded in God and the consequences of moral relativism. Is truth fixed or is it subject to change? The future existence of our free democracy hinges on answering this question correctly. Go to frc.org/decay to learn more.
In America, we face a media onslaught against the Christian perspective. It is now seen as anti-cultural and invalid. Dr. Michael Paulson, a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, talked about how Christians can respond intellectually. Dr. Paulson has researched common arguments against religious liberty. For example, religious values are no different than ethical values. Dr. Paulson argues that the law should give religious exemptions because of the perspective of a religious person who necessarily believes in God as an ultimate source. Religion is different and necessitates a different kind of devotion. Moreover, the Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom of exercise. The Christian perspective is one that is not outdated, but still present and still valid according to the Constitution. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, while all eyes have been on Texas and now Florida in the last 72 hours as it kind of picks up from Hurricane Irma, today the United States, places all across the country, looked back on 9/11. And there seems to be a common denominator. There is one. It's the role of first responders. Joining us now is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. He serves as the Family Research Council's Executive Vice President. He's a former commander of the U.S. Army's Elite Delta Force. Today, actually earlier, he was at the East Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office speaking to first responders there about some of the continued threats that our nation sees, even 16 years after 9/11. And he joins us now. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony. I really enjoyed being with you over there with the first responders today.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that. 16 years ago, America saw one of the most significant attacks on its territory since Pearl Harbor. And the question many are asking is, you know, 16 years later, we've seen isolated attacks, nothing on the scale of 9/11. But is America safer today than it was 16 years ago?
No, I think the truth is the Islamic, radical Islamic threat has actually grown. And I think that America is, I'm afraid, is falling back asleep in terms of the vigilance that is required now to keep America safe. But the threat is very real, and it's been proliferated since 9/11. So I would say that America needs to really pay attention to what's happening now and use very prudent judgment in pursuing known threats and dealing with them swiftly and effectively.
The threats are so voluminous, it's kind of hard to sort through them. The NATO chief said that the world is at its most dangerous point in a generation, obviously pointing in part to North Korea's Kim Jong-un and, you know, his efforts over there with nuclear devices. So some of these things obviously are at a national scale, but when you look at these terrorist attacks, the radical Islamist attacks here on our soil, which have occurred, they've continued to occur since 9/11. We've seen multiple attacks, they just haven't been on the large scale. The first responders, sheriffs in counties and parishes across the country, are increasingly playing very critical roles in keeping America safe at that lowest level of enforcement and protection.
You know, Tony, I think in many ways on 9/11/2001, the front lines of the battle against terrorism shifted from, from the military to the first responders. And you're absolutely right. Given that these attacks that we're seeing now are coming from within, they're not attacks that are being launched from Afghanistan or Pakistan or any place else. They're coming from within. And that means it is up to law enforcement as well as our intelligence community to identify those threats before they manifest into a situation that will kill Americans. And I can't say enough good about the efforts of our law enforcement and our EMTs and our firefighters and so forth. They are the real heroes today, as far as I'm concerned.
General, you know from your experience in 36 years in the United States Army leading special operations, intelligence, knowing what your enemy is doing, trying to determine what they have planned and how they're going to execute those plans is critical to a successful defense. When you look at that from a military standpoint, that's one thing. But when you look on how the battlefield has shifted to where we've just talking about how law enforcement are on the front line of protecting Americans against radical Islam, do they have the intelligence to, from a standpoint of, are they getting enough information that can enable them to protect Americans?
Well, there are multiple examples of how they have preempted strikes by terrorist organizations or terrorist entities. So that is very positive. There are also numerous incidents in which we've had the intelligence, but we didn't do what we should have done with it. And the prime example is the Tsarnaev brothers, who executed a bombing there at the Boston Marathon. We had the intel there with Nadal Hassan down at Fort Hood. We had the intel. We knew who he was talking to, a radical Islamic cleric, and so we could have taken steps. And that is one of the consequences of a society that has become so politically correct that our major concern is about offending anyone versus protecting our people. And I think that's what we've got to break through. I think that the president that we have today is one who will be more inclined to help America to break through that political correctness state and get realistic in terms of what it's going to take to stop the threats.
General, before I let you go, let me ask you, do you agree with the NATO chief that says the world is at its most dangerous point in a generation?
I think it is, Tony. I think it's more than a generation. I think it's certainly my lifetime. Even during the Cold War, neither side wanted a nuclear war. Neither side wanted to die in a nuclear war. Today we have not only North Korea, but we've got the Iranians that are moving rapidly towards having a nuclear weapon. And both of those countries, both of the leaders in both of those countries, are very unstable and unpredictable. And I think that the world is certainly in my lifetime in the greatest peril that I've ever seen it. Now would be a good time for those who believe in prayer to really pray for the leadership of this nation, to have the wisdom and discernment to make the right decisions.
Absolutely. And by the way, General Boykin, you're going to be with us in Baton Rouge tomorrow night at the Greenville Springs Men's Ministry event at 6:30, right?
Absolutely, and I'm expecting to see a full house there.
All right. By the way, if you live in the Baton Rouge area, I invite you to come out. Greenville Springs Baptist Church, General Boykin, the keynote speaker for the men's rally that takes place there at Greenville Springs Baptist Church tomorrow night, 6:30. All right, folks, don't go away. Still a lot more Washington Watch to come after this break. Alex McFarland joins us to discuss about how do Christians live in a world that is increasingly turning its back on the truth. That's next here on Washington Watch.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right. As I mentioned, tomorrow night, Greenville Springs Baptist Church, General Jerry Boykin is going to be the speaker at a men's event, but a big week at my home church, Greenville Springs, for those of you living in the Louisiana area. We'll have the this Friday night and Saturday, September 15th and 16th, is the Truth Conference 2017. It's a gathering that focuses on defining the absolutes of biblical truth in an ever-darkening world. A panel of leading experts will discuss topics such as teen apologetics, Christian parenting, Christian citizenship, and biblical truth. And with us now is one of the speakers, Alex McFarland. He is a speaker, writer, advocate for Christian apologetics. He serves as the director of the Center for Christian Worldview and Apologetics at North Greenville University. And he is the founder of the Truth for a New Generation Apologetics Conference. Alex, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, Tony, thank you so much for having me on. It's great to be with you.
Well, let's start first. Explain for our listeners the difference between worldview and apologetics.
Oh, great question. Well, worldview is really what we believe, and apologetics, at least in terms of Christian apologetics, is explaining and defending what we believe. Worldview, one of the best definitions was set forth about 25 years ago by a man named James Sire. He wrote a book called The Universe Next Door that says a worldview is a set of assumptions which you hold about the basic makeup of reality. Assumptions that may be true or partially true might be entirely false. You hold them consistently or inconsistently, consciously or subconsciously, about the basic makeup of the world. So your view of life, your values, what you think about morality and ethics, what you think is important, what you think is true, that's your worldview. And in terms of apologetics, you know, Christianity is unique, Tony, because really only Christianity can be objectively, empirically defended above people's opinion or preference. I mean, we have the objective truth that underscores and validates the claims of Christianity. And so the Christian worldview really, really is unique in that regard.
Well, let me ask you that about that, Alex, because do you think that a lot of Christians who go to church every week and they are exposed to the Bible, they read the Bible, and they would have what we would call a biblical worldview, right, or very close to it?
Sure.
Is it the reason they're silent, that they won't speak up, is because they don't feel comfortable in defending it?
I think in some cases that's true. One of the common reasons people don't witness for their faith and don't, you know, try to share the gospel with others is fear. And there might be this apprehension that somebody is going to ask me a question that I can't answer. But I really believe for a huge swath of American Christendom, a lot of people simply don't realize how far the culture has drifted. Or maybe they're only beginning to realize. I think as Christianity had home court advantage, shall we say, as, you know, 25, 30 years ago, I'll put it this way, the culture of America 30 years ago was not terribly different from the culture in the founding years of our nation. In terms of morality, spirituality, for two centuries, Christianity had home turf advantage. And as we were the predominant cultural force, there was not really the need in the minds of a lot of people to, you know, be on your best and know how to defend the faith. And, you know, we kind of were apathetic, I think, because, you know, there was not really a wolf at the door. But my goodness, the America of 2017, you know, we've got really a militant secularism, the rise of Islam, the breakdown of the family, the rise of the redefinition of family, the homosexual agenda, more than ever. Oh, my goodness, every believer, every American Christian must now rise to the challenge of 1 Peter 3:15 and be ready.
So this weekend when you come to Baton Rouge to be a part of the Truth Conference, what's going to be your focus?
Oh, well, it's great. One of the things that I want to talk about, Tony, is the research we've done over the last 2 years among millennials and younger, millennials, plurals, and Generation Z, and really trying to get into what their mindset is because, you know, obviously we want people of all ages to know Christ and to thrive as a believer. But my real heartbeat, Tony, has been young people. And we've interviewed over 250 college students and high schoolers and some middle schoolers for the book Abandoned Faith that I wrote, and, you know, really wanting to try to get into their mind and what their perspective is. And, you know, how can it be that young people raised in church and maybe even made a profession of faith can hold wildly unbiblical ideas and even Christian convictions not be able to act on those? So I'm going to be talking about millennials and how to reach and retain them. We're also going to be talking about some of the evidence for the New Testament. But, oh my goodness, Truth 2017 is going to be phenomenal. You're going to be there, Frank Turek, Lauren Green of Fox News, Abe Hamilton III. If you're anywhere near Baton Rouge, Louisiana, folks, you don't want to miss September 15 and 16.
All right, Alex McFarland, looking forward to seeing you in Baton Rouge.
Into ditto, this week. Ditto, my friend.
All right, Alex McFarland, if you listen to AFR, you hear him before this program. By the way, tomorrow, Lauren Green will join us. She'll be talking about her new book and what she's going to be talking about at the Truth 2017 conference. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, when we come back, we're going to the phones. Don't go away.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
I'm Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch, the website tonyperkins.com. If you happen to be on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. You can kind of keep up with me there. All right, here's what I want to talk about this afternoon. A lot going on, but I want to talk about this. You know, one of the things we hear, you know, 9/11, as I mentioned 16 years ago, it's we'll never forget. I want to ask you this question. Do you think that we have forgotten the threat? I mean, there's a look, 16 years ago, there's a lot of people who don't recall that. They were either too young, of course, obviously, if they maybe not have been born. But have we forgotten the threat? You know, we see this from time to time. We see this in San Bernardino comes to mind, where in testimony following that event, there were those who said they saw things happening, but they didn't say anything because they did not want to be labeled as being Islamophobic or anything. And so, you know, has political correctness caused us to forget what the real threat was? I mean, it's we have these events. We commemorate the occurrence 16 years ago. But have we forgotten really what was behind it? 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. You heard the general on here earlier talking about how the threat is as great, if not greater. Radical Islamists around the world continue to operate, and we're just talking about those individual cells that perpetrate acts of terrorism. And, of course, terrorism, and let me just say, I spent, when I came out of the Marine Corps, 5 years working with the State Department in anti-terrorism, so I know a little bit about it. I'm not an expert by any means. But I understand how it operates, and their purpose is to terrorize, to intimidate, to create fear. And they have not backed off. We are in a protracted, the longest war we've been engaged in, trying to go after operators in Afghanistan. So have we forgotten? Have we forgotten the threat? 866-372-7234, the number to get in on the conversation this afternoon. And again, let me remind you, you go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. There's information about the Truth Conference. If you live within driving distance of Baton Rouge, I would strongly recommend that you join us this Friday night and Saturday. You can find out more. They've got the whole schedule of speakers and events there at the website. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. All right, let's go to Kansas, where Jenny is on the line. Jenny, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, hello. I just have some thoughts as we're just going through a lot of unknowns a little bit with the hurricane coming. But when you look at our Christian nation and us as Christians praying for God to protect us, to intervene, to help us, and then you have the extreme Islam going ahead and talking about Allah, please, destroy these Americans, bring havoc and all that upon that country. So you kind of looked at, the extremes between Christianity and terrorists with Islam.
Yeah, and Jenny, that's a great point. I mean, I don't know any Christians who are praying for the destruction of people, of a country. Now, I'm sure there are Christians, myself included, that praying that God would take care of the stuff in North Korea, not against the people, but against the lunatic that's running the country. But in terms of praying that natural disasters would, wipe out people, or that destruction would come to a people. That is a great point of contrast between Christianity and those that have, bought into a radicalization of Islam or are living it in a radical way. Jenny, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Dallas, where Carol is on the line. Carol, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well. And yourself?
I am doing well. And as far as 9/11, no, I have not forgotten, and I never will forget. And today, my Facebook post was about watching the images and seeing live when the second plane flew into that tower, and watching people jumping out of windows and then standing there and seeing the towers fall.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember watching that myself.
I cannot, even to this day, I cannot get that out of my mind. And the words that I spoke, my son was the one who called. He goes, "Turn on the TV, Mom, turn on the TV. The World Trade Center's been bombed." And I got up and turned the TV on, and my words to him were, "We just went to war." And that is pretty much what happened.
Yeah, for those that were alive at that point and aware of what was going on, that's one of those days. Like my a little older than me, but my parents' generation, they all, when John F. Kennedy was shot, they knew where they were. They could describe what happened and what they were doing. And this is one of those things I remember distinctly, where I was, what I was doing, and what I was watching. When that occurred, I was in the Louisiana legislature. We were not in session, but I was in the legislature at that time. I was not in law enforcement. And I remember the same thing as Carol defined it. I said, oh, we are going to war. We're under attack. And I remember talking to some of my colleagues who had been in law enforcement and were military. And I just remembered the great anxiety as a nation under attack, not knowing what might be coming next. So you're absolutely right, Carol. For those who saw it, you will not forget it, but we cannot forget the threat that was behind it, and that threat continues to be real. All right, let's continue our conversation. Let's go to Memphis, Tennessee, where Mark is on the line. Mark, welcome to Washington Watch.
Oh, yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would just like to say that, you know, the media tends to believe that this war is recent, you know, that radical Islam is a new war. And my thought on it is it's not a new war at all. This has been going on for centuries and centuries, and we just don't have a really good understanding of the history of Islam because it's simply not being taught. But I make very little distinction, actually, between radical Islam and your so-called moderates. The moderates are hiding the radicals who commit crimes over in Europe. There were moderates who hid the radical guys who created that mess in Paris, where hundreds of people died.
Yes, I guess, Mark, I would describe it as this way, Mark. I think when those who Christianity and Islam, as I was talking about earlier in terms of how Christians pray for the well-being of people. They love people. They love, they're told to love their enemy. Islam's told to kill their enemy, subject them or kill them. So there's sharp contrast between the two. I mean, they're polar opposites. Those who, in Christianity, we have what we call cultural Christians. They just kind of, they're Christian because they were born into a Christian home or a church. They went to a church, but they don't have a personal relationship with Christ. They don't actually live according to the teachings of Scripture. Same is true with Islam. You have those who, you know, they're culturally Islamic. They don't live by the teachings of Islam, but because the way Islam works, if you're born into an Islamic family, you're stuck. If you try to change, you're killed. So I think that's the distinction of those who don't authentically live out the Islamic faith.
Absolutely. I would like to also encourage listeners out there to consider this. Anytime the Muslims come, the jihad always seems to come with them. In my mind, there's a far better answer, and that is limiting Muslim immigration to America de facto. And by that, I mean eliminating college visas to Muslims. Eliminating the Syrian refugee program, immediately beginning to find the illegal aliens in America who are Muslim and deport them quickly. And we also need to take a very strong look at where the finances are going with a lot of these high-end Muslim organizations. They need to be investigated from the top down by the very best that we have.
Well, there have been, but under the previous administration, the law enforcement was prohibited from looking at suspicious activities. And so I think that's something the Trump administration has to address and begin looking at once again, activities that are suspicious in nature and dangerous at their core. Mark, thanks so much for listening and calling in. And he's right about the history. I mean, this war, this conflict between Islam and basically everyone else has been going on for centuries. I mean, there was kind of a hiatus after the Battle of Tours. When they were pushed back, they kind of went into, I wouldn't say hiding, but they were basically been working their way back, and now as they're seeking to establish, their presence again worldwide, they've been aggressive in the last few decades. Now, for Americans, you know, we've just really gotten to see them here in America after 9/11. That's one way. Oh, well, where'd this come from? Well, look, I mean, those that had been involved in our military and even the work that I did pre-9/11 on anti-terrorism was heavily focused on the Islamic threat. It just wasn't here in the United States. It was elsewhere. But Mark is right. This is not new. This has been out there. Again, Mark, thanks for calling in. Let's take another call here. Let's go to William in Tennessee. William, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for taking my call, Tony. Tony, I believe that the American people, the general person out there, isn't fully aware of what occurred on 9/11, other than what they saw in the media. I mean, just as soon as it happened, you had from the top down the president come out and declaring that Islam was a religion of peace. And the average person doesn't really know how that religion is. I mean, it's more of a political ideology than it is a religion.
You're absolutely right. It's only about 16% of it is a religion. It's a economic system, a finance system. You've got Sharia law, a judicial system. It's a military system. I mean, it is. You're absolutely right, and I don't think people completely understand that. Let me, William. Thanks so much for the call. To William's point, I can talk about this now. Back during the Bush administration, we were dealing with an Afghani who had converted to Christianity, and he was jailed and charged with blasphemy, and he was going to die. His name was Abdul Rahman. You can Google this and look it up. Well, somehow, much like Maryam Ibrahim came to our attention, we advocated for her to seek her release. We did the same thing for Abdul. And this was back during the Bush administration. And I remember we couldn't get any response from the State Department. Again, this was during the Bush administration. And so we took it to the public to advocate publicly using the media. And so the White House called and upset because we, why didn't you tell us this? And we tried. Long story short, I was called to the White House for a briefing in one of their secure rooms, and we're told that he was being released, and they said right now as we speak he's being put on a UN plane and he's being flown to, I believe he went to Italy, may stop in Germany, I'm not sure which, it's been a while back, but the point was this: I asked the question. I said, why does the president say that Islam is a religion of peace? And in a candid private conversation, but again, it's been a number of years ago, it's safe to say now, they said, you know, every time that comes across, and this was a security advisor, said every time that comes across my desk, I scratch that out. And he said, there's been a lot of turmoil within the administration about that, about a lot of pushback. And I said, well, so why is it done? They said, well, they told me, for political purposes. Because they needed to be political on this issue. This is what we're talking about. Political correctness is so dangerous. Whether it's the issue of radical Islam, whether it's the issue of redefinition of marriage, human sexuality, whatever. Truth is truth. I don't care if you're a politician. I don't care if you're a military leader. I don't care if you're a mom or a dad or a preacher. The truth is truth. And we should stand up and speak that truth. All right, folks, we're out of time for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Sorry to get to the rest of the calls, but there's tomorrow, Lord willing. Until then, remember the words of the Apostle Paul. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.